You guys ready to get classic? Hey, everybody. Welcome to another show. We've got a bunch of amazing topics for you, such as Target and apes. Something that says killer guy. I don't know what that means, but hopefully by the time we get to it, I will remember and then tell you all about it. So get excited. Welcome to this episode, our special tribute to teens. Not really. That was our Spider-Man, Amazing Spider webcast. I don't know if you guys are listening to that or not. I don't really do commercials for shit. So, you know, I won't just tell you, like, you should probably listen to it. Why not? You know how, like, everything that exists in the world, there's a podcast, and it's like, we go through every single one of blank, you know, every episode of this show, or da-da-da-da. Well, that's what we're doing with Amazing Spider-Man. And but, you know, it's mostly like I told a story about a dream I had where I crapped myself or something like that. Something like that happened. You know, it's pretty much what you get here, but with some framing, I think. I don't know. It might be terrible. We've only done about 8, so it's not very good. What was this show doing on episode 8? You know what I'm saying? Where were we on episode 8? Should we find out? I don't really know. I doubt that it was anything of interest or productivity or goodness. Let's see. Older. We just got to keep going back in time. Gotta get back in time. Let's see. When do you think number 8 was, by the way? Let's just take a guess. Wow, look at this. I spent a lot of time on the art on this website at one time rather than just searching for existing art. I really need to, I need some more art, you guys, for these posts. Crappy drawings, the crappier, not the better, but still good. Let's see. Cheers to horror movies, eviscerated hamsters, dart in the eye, and jackhammers. Not cheers to John Mayer. This was April of 2011. Let's just see what happens. Did we have a theme song? It could be the very same theme song. Oh, we had a different Lucero song. Now, at this time, I think I always had a guest. I don't think I did non-guested shows for quite a while.
Okay, cheers, everybody. Thanks for coming back to our show again. God knows why you would do that. We got Alex sitting across from me.
Hey, everybody.
And Sarah on the side.
Hello.
Oh, Sarah.
Cheers. As Peter
yeah,
would say.
Cheers. Thanks. Yeah, every time, by the way, going back through the shows, I was looking.
Going back through all seven shows.
Everybody. And then everyone else says, hey, everybody. And then they gave me shit for starting off with, hey, everybody.
Yeah. I was just going to give you
minor
shit for
correction.
The way like,
I think I just said,
everybody.
Hey, everybody, this
like,
time.
Hey, everybody. I do the same thing.
Because I thought that's what I did.
Yeah, you got to get like the first couple words out and then,
that's true.
Then things go. So how was your weekend? It's a Sunday afternoon. We're all getting ready, packing our pencils to go back to school.
Number 2 only.
Yeah.
Do you like my sound of my
Where
brace face?
A number
packing
three.
Our pencils, going back to school.
Soft lead.
Soft?
Mm-hmm.
Is it why?
Okay. Well, there you go. That's what we were talking about. Fucking pencils and shit. So, Amazing Spider webcast, way more interesting by episode 8 than Helpful Snowman was by episode 8. And look how great this got. So just imagine how great that's going to be on episode fucking whatever the hell we're on now. Had a minor incident about a week ago, 2 weeks ago. I went to Target. Now, normally this is a great thing to do. Sort of. Target is definitely like, fucked up in the way of like, I think 4 or 5 times I've gone to, now, almost every time that I've gone to a Walmart, I went to buy something. And then I go to get in line. And because I go to Walmart very late, there's one line, right? And I go to get in line and I just decide to abandon whatever I've picked up and leave. Because you know what? Even the time I spent parking, walking in the store, finding the thing I wanted, and then, or you know, the closest approximation that Walmart has to offer. And then I walk to the front. By the time I get there, I'm like, I don't want it this bad. I don't know how bad I really wanted it, but I know it wasn't this bad. Target, I've done the same thing a few times. It'll be like a batteries or a or one battery, you know, if you got a watch battery. I just disassembled a watch to get the battery out of it, like a shitty watch for, you know, running or whatever. And it's got a battery in it that doesn't seem to be carried by any stores. I'm like, ah, this is a trick. This is a scheme. I've been tricked into taking this battery, and now I have to probably call China or Amazon from China. It's going to take 8 weeks to get here. This is the culture, right? Like of, oh, well, we can just throw things away and get a new one. And like, as much as I tried, as much as I bought the little screwdrivers at some point and opened it and took the thing out and was like, oh God, I'm not going to remember how to do this. And then also, of course, so I unscrewed the back of the watch and I have these 4 tiny screws, right? And I was like, where the fuck am I going to put these until I get this battery? Because it could be, well, at that time I was like, could be several days. And now I'm like, it's been 4 weeks and I'm no closer because I just, every time I go to the grocery store or every time I go to like a Target, I look at the batteries because I'm like, maybe they're just out. Maybe they just ran out. But nay, I think it's just not a common battery. So, of course, I didn't make it too long before I had the screws in the screwdriver tray because I was like, I'm going to be smart. I'm not going to just leave them on the counter because that's never going to work. I don't want to put them back in the watch because I don't want to unscrewdrive them again. Screw de-drive them again. So I'm going to put them in the tray with the screwdrivers and just leave it. Somehow I managed to flip this entire tray onto the floor and lose all 4 screws, but I did find all 4. It was a weird moment, right? Because I found all 4 screws, big victory, but losing all 4 screws to my expected own clumsiness was so fulfilling of a prophecy that it was pretty hard to... It's like a victory, but it's only a victory because I, you know, did something so fucking stupid to put myself in a position where a victory was required. So I don't know if that still counts as a victory. I'm sure there's some German word for this, but, you know, that means fake shit victory. But there you go. And a fake shit victory. Anyway, so I've gone to Target, gone out of line a few times. The last time I went there, however... my problem was different. It was that I realized when I went in that I was wearing my work clothes, which we have a looser dress code, but I was wearing khaki pants and a red shirt. So I looked to the entire world like an employee of Target. And I also had my name tag on from work. Now, this name tag is pretty distinctly different from a Target name tag, but I can also see why someone would think I worked at Target. Now, the first time I was mistaken for a Target employee on that trip, I was willing to let it go. This guy was like, can you tell me, I need to hook into a PA system at a thing. And then I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't work here. By the way, I had headphones in the whole time. I always think headphones are going to counteract, you know, whatever, but I guess people just think, like, this guy's really playing it fast and loose wearing the headphones at work, huh? So this guy was like, I need something, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't work here. And he saw where I worked, and he's like, oh, okay, that's cool. And we talked a little bit, and then he was like, well, yeah, I'm going to this thing, and I need to hook up. And he kind of started edging back into the original question he was asking me, which I was like, listen, I know that you now know that I have a job and that in the capacity of that job, this might be the kind of question that I would answer. But like, I'm in this aisle right now to find a battery for this dumb fucking watch that I'm trying to replace the battery on, which I have two of this watch, by the way. My normal brilliant plan of buying the same thing, you know, like I find something I like and I just buy a bunch of it, right? You find a good pair of running shorts, you just buy five of them. And then you don't have to buy any new ones forever. I have all the same socks, I have all the same underwear. It's all just, you know, I buy a shitload and then just never think of it. And so I guess at some point with watches, I was like, well, if I like this one, I'm going to just get another one because they were cheap. But now they're both out of battery and both, I assume, require the same battery. I assume that when I get this, you know, probably 16-pack of batteries and they show up and they're stacked like Necco wafers and probably hot as shit from being stacked that way, that I'll be able to use the ones on the ends maybe. And they'll both go in the watches. So I'm just there for that. I'm not really there to troubleshoot a PA system at some other event that I don't, that you can't describe to me and that I don't know anything about. I gotta go. So I took off, and not 2 minutes later, I'm going down another aisle, and this lady turns, and she's like, excuse me, can you tell me? And I busted in, and I was nice. At first, I was nice. I smiled, and I was like, I'm sorry. I wore a dumb thing today. I don't work here. I just wore these clothes on accident. And then she was like, oh. And she gave me this look, like, okay, when we first started talking, I was kind of, you know, hey, we're on the same side. We've all done it, right? We've all done it. Most of us have probably gone to Target wearing something that gets us mistaken for an employee of Target. I'm sure there are those of us who've gone to, you know, I went to a wedding the other weekend and was like, I bet there's a lot of catering, because a lot of catering service, they wear like a white shirt, a vest, black tie, black pants. Sure, there's many a person who showed up to a wedding looking like that, and someone's like, hey, bring some of those fucking meatballs over here. And it's like, I don't work for the catering. And then it's like, oh, all right, see you later. I probably should know who you are, but fuck it. I'll just pretend I was drunk. So I was like, we've all been there, right? We've all had that situation where we dressed wrong, and it's not the other person's fault, right? I didn't blame her for thinking I worked at Target. However, was like, oh, listen, before you even tell me what you want and waste everyone's time, I do not work here. I'm not going to help you. And, you know, nicely kind of like, haha, isn't that the way? Now, when I said this, her face clouded, as they say, when they're too lazy to say, her face got mean. I guess clouds are mean when they're on a face. Her face meaned it up. And then she looked at me like I was trying to trick her. Whether the trick that she perceived there was that I did in fact work at Target and was making up a story to get out of it, or that I had worn this outfit because I think it's really funny to go to Target and just like wear this shit, I don't know which of those she thought. But she definitely thought something. And then she started talking again about like, oh, well, I'm looking, and I was like, no, no, I just told you, no, I don't know where these things are. I went from instantly like, hey, we're all on the same team, humanity's great, to instantly furious. So angry that this person thought I worked at Target. Not because I'm like, oh, working at Target sucks or whatever, but because I'm like, I just told you I don't work at Target. I don't work here. I cannot help you, nor do I want to, even if I did. You know what? It's like by the end of this 2-second transaction, I wanted to tell her, you know what? Even if I did work here, I wouldn't help you. I want to apply for a job here just so I cannot help you because you're so mean. I think you're mean. That was my Target run-in. There was a story that came across my desk that I don't think we ever talked about on this show, that it seemed like everyone else talked about. So I was like, you know what? Better give my 2 cents. This is our new segment, Pete's 2 cents. Bum, 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 ba-dum, bum, ba-dum. Ding, ding. That's the 2 pennies
dropping on the... Hang on, let me get two pennies. All right. These are quarters. This is both a baller move and not, because it's quarters instead of pennies, so it's way more than my 2 cents. But it's quarters because I live in a place where I pay quarters into a machine to do my laundry. So there you go. So here's Pete's 2 cents. That went forever. I am talking, of course, about the ape that was killed after a little boy attacked it by going in its habitat. No, I don't know. The whole world was obsessed with the idea that a kid fell into an ape cage, ape enclosure, ape, the ape part of the zoo, and then the ape was killed, and then the kid was gone and saved or whatever. Now, there's a lot of different angles that have been taken on this. One angle being like, shitty parenting. Maybe you shouldn't let your kids like fall into an ape enclosure. One angle that's very defensive of the parents, that's like, hey, a kid can just disappear and blah, blah, blah. You know, to which I'm like, yeah, I'm semi-sympathetic to that. I mean, it hasn't happened. Doesn't seem to happen very often, but okay. It doesn't seem to happen often where a kid falls into an ape cage. But whatever. That's another angle. Another angle that's kind of like, quit shaming the parents. And then, of course, the angle that's like, hey, like five people shot each other in Chicago the same day. No one gives a fuck about them. Everyone cares about this ape. Which is also another opinion that I think is kind of dumb, but whatever. It's like, yeah, but we didn't have, it's not like a kid fell into a guy's apartment and then the guy in the apartment was kind of lumbering over to the kid and then the dad shot the other guy. That would be great. And it was all on video. Here's my opinion on the whole thing, okay? I think that I'm going to play Judge Petey here and be tough but fair. And I think we'll all agree at the end of this that it's fair, okay? Let me put this another way. Let's say instead of the kid falling in there and the ape being killed, that another action of the killed resulted in the ape being dead. Let's say the kid had a bugle like Curious George had that he sort of fed to a giraffe or a saxophone or something. He fed some kind of like brass instrument to a giraffe one time. An ostrich. I always think it's a giraffe because I picture it like in the giraffe, like you can see it in its neck. But it was an ostrich. And you're like, wouldn't that be just fucking dead? I mean, whatever. But I guess maybe it was breathing comically through the bugle. So it was like, ha, ha, ha. Comically to me, terrifying to me as a child. This is a book that as a child terrified me because I was like, he just almost murdered that other animal. Also, he's a monkey. That's an ostrich. How out of sorts is it for a monkey to murder an ostrich by accident, let alone on purpose? I mean, would it be that crazy if a monkey went nuts and just jumped on an ostrich and twisted its head off? I don't know. I don't know. I'm led to believe, based on this ape behavior, that maybe not. I don't know. It's unpredictable. But anyway, let's say the kid threw a bugle. He had a bugle that his parents bought him at some shitty zoo gift shop. He throws it into the gorilla cage. The gorilla swallows it, suffocates, and dies. Now, would I say that, like, the parents and this kid are 100% responsible for that? Maybe, maybe not. Do I think that they should pay some kind of fine or pay some kind of punishment for the death of the gorilla? Totally, right? I think that's fair. I mean, I think there's a certain amount, you know, if it's sort of like how I feel about these things. Like, there's a baseball field by my house. On my way to work, and they rarely play baseball there, but they have signs all over the fence, very small, so you can never read them in your car, but basically these signs that are like, we're not responsible if your car gets hit by a baseball and, you know, the window shatters or whatever, to which I'm like, the fuck you're not. Do you really think I'm going to just get out and then start walking up to the fence after my windshield is smashed
and then be like, oh, well, the sign says that. Fuck that. No way, right? Who would do that? Who would just be like, well, they put up a sign that says I'm not responsible? Because that to me is like, if I just put up a sign near my apartment that was like, hey, you're not responsible. I'm not responsible if you get hit with a bullet that flies through the wall because I'm just shooting my gun. I'm shooting it in my apartment. Now, if something goes awry and it leaves my apartment, how can I be held accountable for that, right? So I do think that there's some kind of responsibility there, okay? And now I'm not going to put the responsibility on the level of, like, you have to, you know, fucking, I don't know, be forgiven by the Pope and all this shit. Here's what I think is fair. I think they should be given two options, these parents. Three options, okay? Number one is to pay what we could find to be a fair price for this ape. Now, I know that that's not like necessarily an easy number to come by, but I think we could come to an agreement here of, you know, I mean, what is it charged to replace it with another ape? There you go. Maybe it's not the same fucking gorilla. Maybe it's not this or that, but come on. Let's be reasonable. Just like in insurance, when you lose your car, you probably aren't going to get the exact same car again. But, you know, something equivalent. What's an equivalent? What do I have to do to put you in another ape today? And that's option A, right? They can just pay for it. They can work it out with the zoo and pay in installments or some shit. I don't care about that. Option A. Option B is that the parents, every one weekend a month, one of the parents has to dress up as in a gorilla costume and get in an enclosure in the zoo, like one Saturday a month, and until they pay back the time, you know, and they make whatever ape wages, and they pay back the time that they kind of spent there, until they've done their community service by entertaining the world to the level of one ape, whatever that would have been. Right? Okay, number three, they can get in the cage and do that thing, but they don't have to be in the ape costume. I would give that option too. And what it would be is then you have this zoo exhibit, and it's like inattentive parent, ? And it's like, here's a typical American parent, and here's what's bad about them, and here's what's good about them, and da-da-da-da. And then, you know, it could be just some fucking dad standing there like, whatever. Or, you know, the mom, I don't know which parents were there or whatever. But and then they're just at the zoo. And then everyone kind of comes by and is like, look at this. These are my options. I think these are good options. I really think they should pay for the ape, though. I think that's reasonable. What I really wanted to talk about, though, with this ape, because here's what I found fascinating that I didn't hear anyone else talking about, really. Okay, so this ape, this kid falls in, and, you know, within a few minutes, someone shoots this ape. It's dead. They get the kid out. Everything's good, right? What that means is every zoo must have some kind of small arsenal in case shit gets fucked up, right? They're like, listen, is it like on your first day at the zoo, you go by this closet, and you're like, what's in there? And they're like, well, sometimes shit gets fucked up at the zoo. Not often, probably not in your lifetime, but hey, in your lifetime at a zoo somewhere, shit's gonna get fucked up, right? Especially if you work in one of those Chinese zoos. I heard some bad shit about those. But anyway, this is a closet full of guns to basically take out an animal that if you have to. You know, so they have a rifle, and I guess you can shoot an ape with it. I mean, they must have, what do you use to kill a rhino? Like a fucking grenade launcher? A flamethrower? You know what I mean? It also made me think, okay, well, if they've got these guns and stuff here, they must have someone on the staff there who's like a good shot. Because you wouldn't want someone to be like, oh, fuck, I just hit this ape in the shoulder with a bullet, and now he's pissed. I mean, it's got to be somebody who's fairly confident with a weapon, who's not going to kill this kid, who's going to kill the ape, right?
Like, and this is what no one was talking about. That person must be on staff at the zoo. And this made me wonder, is there some back room at every zoo where it's like some old time, you know, those old time explorers, like an old white dude who's real thin with a long mustache and one of those pith helmets? Is there just a guy in every zoo in like a secret hidden chamber, you know, and his walls are covered with old hunting trophies and shit? And he's always just like, yes, it's always been me versus the animals. I've always considered them my worst enemies. Here, I'm on the front lines. And I'm near a Sbarro because I'm in America. See, you can be on the front lines in another country. But anyway, is that guy? Is that a guy? I like to imagine that's a guy at every zoo who's just basically waiting to kill at a moment's notice, you know, because it's required of him. And, you know, like I picture the zookeeper running in there and he's like, holy shit, we need you to, you got to put this ape down. And he's like, really? And he's, you know, polishing a gun or something, looking down the sight.
Oh, so it seems that your pacifist ways of maintaining animals have failed you yet again. When will you learn?
And then, you know, he like gets a bunch of bullets out and he goes and he's like, I'll be back in 4 minutes. Please bring the ape's corpse to my chamber. It's got to be, right? I want to know who pulled that trigger. And they keep it a secret, probably because they're like, oh, we don't want to reveal this employee's information. But the truth is, they don't want us to know about this network of fucking weirdos who live at the zoo and just blow away an animal. Just waiting. You know, they're kind of like a cop. I got to believe there's some cops out there who are like, I cannot wait to shoot somebody. I am so excited to blow someone away. I can hardly describe it. But this has to be a thing. So there you go. That's the story of the ape. That's my 2 cents. You like that? Well, speaking of books, so when I was talking about books, that got me all excited about books I read in school. Because I was thinking about, I was talking to Poon Master Flex about Of Mice and Men and how reading that book, you know, and she's like, I've never read that. And I was like, you know, it's weird. There's this one really fucked up part in Of Mice and Men. So there's this guy, I think he's Curly, works on this farm or this ranch or whatever, and he's this asshole. Doesn't matter. None of this matters. Here's what matters. There's brief mention in this book of Curly keeps his hand in a glove full of Vaseline to keep it, quote, soft for his woman, end quote. Now, why that's included in this book, I do not know and will never know. Why that's like a classic... This is a classic piece of literature, but I gotta believe every English teacher, when it comes to that part, is like, fucking John Steinbeck, I wish you hadn't put that. That is such an unnecessary and weird detail. That's not like a thing I've heard of ever. Like, oh yeah, I keep my hand in a glove full of Vaseline to keep my hand soft for my woman. Now you gotta assume that what Curly's doing with this hand that he keeps soft for his woman is touching her vagina, right? I mean, that's all. Why else would, just because in general she's like, oh, well, as long as one hand's soft, you can just touch my face with that hand. Like, well, that makes no sense. How soft does your hand have to be to touch somebody's face? It's got to be vagina. Maybe the butt. Could be for the butt, but it's definitely for illicit purposes, right? Curly's soft hand. So anyway, that got me thinking a lot about the books we read in high school and the weird, it seems like almost all of them have some kind of weird shit in it. And so I thought, I made a little list of these here and thought maybe we'd go through some of these and I would remember the weird part. For example, Romeo and Juliet. Now, the weird part of reading that was we read it in this class. We had this weird teacher. I had a couple really fucking weird English teachers. I think probably in like episode 1, we talked about this English teacher that we had
who would like throw fits in class, and she like threw chairs around the room and stuff like that. She's very passionate, you could say. Also, she's the one who famously told the entire class the story that she was pregnant and said it wasn't because she had sex. Her boyfriend was in the bed with her masturbating, and some of it got on her. That's what she told us. It, like, eighth grade. Now, why? I have so many questions about that story that will remain forever unanswered, right? But, like, why would you tell a bunch of eighth graders that anyway? I mean, when you tell a bunch of eighth grade kids that you're pregnant, I don't think they care particularly. You know what I mean? You're their teacher. What are eighth graders really going to be like, oh, how did that happen? What happened? Tell me about the physics of it. You know, I assume this happened from missionary position sex, but I'm giving you the opportunity to tell me otherwise. You can come clean now, as I shine a pistol in my zebra killing room or whatever. It was very bizarre, right? And bizarre because it was like a sex thing, which always makes it weirder, I think. And, you know, this is the same. We'll just skip ahead to this is the same teacher. No, I'm sorry. This is a different teacher. Anyway, that was the craziest one. I mean, obviously. That was also the one who, in the play that we were in like eighth grade, I was supposed to take off like a different article of clothing. Every time I came on stage, I was, you know, take off my pants at different parts. She had a skinny kid, a fat kid, and a really tall, hairy kid dancing around with no shirt on, oiled up. Lots of weird shit going on in this play. You know, fake cigarettes needed to happen in the play. I remember that was a big thing for no real reason. I just wonder, like, I wonder a lot about the future of education because it's like, yeah, I guess at the time, like, that was fucked up. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't think that was damage. I think by the time I was in eighth grade, the damage was done. You know what I mean? It was a little late for, I don't know. Maybe I was like an already pre-damaged kid, so it didn't matter as much. Maybe there are other kids out there who are still undamaged in eighth grade. And if they make it a couple more years, we'll be like healthy adults with healthy relationships. Maybe that's my problem, is that I'm assuming everyone was like me. And it's like, oh yeah, by the time I was in fucking eighth grade, I knew shit was fucked up. Anyway, I had another English teacher, though, who was kind of also a weirdo, especially about sex stuff. Primary example, we read Lord of the Flies, right? And there's the scene where these kids are all like killing a pig to eat it. You know, kill the pigs, spill its blood, la-di-da. And, you know, she was insisting that this was like a rape scene, that this is supposed to be a rape scene. Now let's see the pig hunts in Lord of the Flies. This is a, you know, a thing. Now, if you haven't read this scene, let's see. Here, struck down by the heat, the sow fell and the hunters hurled themselves at her. This dreadful eruption from an unknown world made her frantic. She squealed and bucked, and the air was full of sweat and noise and blood and terror. The spear moved forward inch by inch, and the terrified squealing became a high-pitched scream. Then Jack found the throat, and the hot blood spouted over his hands. The sow collapsed under them. So there you go. So we talk about this as the rape scene, I guess. Now, I guess, here's the thing. I think there are a lot of things that you could make a lot of things. This is the problem I always had with, like, literature classes in high school, especially, right? Because you could just fucking dig so deep into something, or you could say that represents so many things. Oh, the Holocaust, fucking, basically any bad thing. You could be like, this represents it. But also, I guess what's weird, here's something that's weird about me. Being on the other end of it, right? And like thinking about symbolism and stuff like that.
I don't know why you would write that scene that way, to symbolize a rape. Because to me, I'm like, I think it's pretty horrific as is, right? I think that like what exactly it's describing is horrific. I think there's something to the fact that like, yes, this murder has some similarities to like, you know, sex and death having similarity or something like that. I mean, that's like the oldest fucking thing in the book, right? Oh, there's this French word that means like the little ejaculation of death's penis or whatever. But this teacher, now, okay, so here's, I hated it because you always had to be like, well, what do you think it means? Well, what about, could it mean this? Could it mean that? And there was never a time when I feel like a teacher would say, I think that's taking it too far. I feel like you could have said, I think this pig death represents like extraterrestrials coming to Earth and, you know, probing somebody, right? And they're using its blood to like further their race and its, you know, flesh. And I think that William Golding believed, author of Lord of the Flies, believed in aliens. And I think he knew something we didn't. And that's why he was trying to express it that way. You know, and he was pretty much silenced after that, right? I feel like you could have said this in a class and then a teacher would have been like, interesting theory, instead of being like, okay, that's fucking stupid. So I just feel like you could talk these things to death because sometimes they're so vague and whatever. I just find it weird that like, I guess if I was going to write a scene that was a rape scene, I would write a rape scene, you know, and if I was going to write a murder scene, I would write a murder scene. And that's me. I guess that's how my tastes run. But I just find that, I find the murder of the pig to be very evocative in the book and symbolic in, that'll do, pig. That's all. That's why I don't understand it. That'll do, pig. So anyway, here's what was weird about it, though. It wasn't so much that this was a theory or whatever, because it's like, yeah, I guess there's a fucking million theories. This teacher was very insistent. Not that this was an interpretation of the story or a possibility, that this is what it was. That it was a rape in the story, that one of the boys was raping one of the other boys, which is another thing that I hate about, like, hoity-toity literary criticism, because it's got... There's the one layer, okay, if you want to try and convince me, like, this is a story and it's got this murder in it, but, you know, it's kind of, it's very evocative of rape, and it's kind of meant to represent that. I'm like, all right. But when you're like, this is, what's happening in the story is these boys are raping each other, but they're just not going to, he couldn't put that in there, right? And it's like, I think that's pushing it. But this teacher was fucking insistent. Again, and you're in like eighth grade and you're like, you know, I'm ready for some like further investigation into literature, but that seems like pushing it. This same teacher also, we read Romeo and Juliet. Because nothing a kid wants to read more than a fucking story he can't understand any of the words to, doesn't know any of the politics behind, doesn't really understand. I feel like teachers, English teachers are always like, kids are going to love Romeo and Juliet. Here's why. It's got sex. It's got violence. It's, you know, it's something they understand. Star-crossed lovers. Who hasn't had a boyfriend or a girlfriend that their parents didn't approve of? And I was like, well, me, I haven't really had a boyfriend or a girlfriend. So I, you know, yeah. Yes, I understand what's happening in this story. And basically, from the eighth grade mindset, when you read Romeo and Juliet, you're like, well, if someone would let me have sex with her, yeah, I'd probably drink poison. Why not? You know, because it's either drink the poison to do that or, you know, don't do that and drink the poison because you're sad. These are the options. They're really shitty options. You might as well just fucking at least have sex with the Juliet, right? She's excited about it. This is a good situation. Also, you're like, fuck your parents. Because it's not like the parents in Romeo and Juliet are like, well, listen, Juliet smokes and her parents aren't home. I had a little story of star-crossed love in eighth grade, too.
Do you want me to tell you my story of star-crossed love? It was actually, it coincided with this play. I think I told most of this story also in episode one of this show, but it's cool. It's been a long fucking time, right? So I was in this play, and there was someone else cast in the play in a minor role, or maybe it was a tech person or something, and was this girl I didn't know. We'll call her Steve. I don't know why we picked Steve. But we over here have made this decision as a group, so we got to stick with it. So Steve and I talked a little bit, you know, during the rehearsals and whatnot. And then a couple people who were better friends with Steve started asking me, like, what I thought of Steve. And I was like, I don't know. Steve's cool. Steve was cool. Steve was, let's call Steve a fast tracker, by which I mean, well, we'll get to what I mean. So then you have these cast parties. Now, here's what I didn't understand. I didn't understand the appeal of being in plays and doing this stuff until that moment. Until the moment I was at this cast party in a hot tub and I touched a boob. Then I was like, oh, this is why. When I'm in a hot tub and I have a little eighth grade boner, by the way, I don't know whose house that cast party was at. I don't know why it was there. Whoever that was, shame on you. And also, fucking gross. There's no way if... Can you imagine you have, like, a kid and then they're in eighth grade? I'd be like, you are banned from the hot tub. As soon as you start jacking off, you're not allowed in the hot tub ever again until you're, like, moved out of the house and come back and you're in by yourself. That's it. Or your parents are with you. Or your grandparents. But no... There will be no, the last thing I would want is like 10 eighth graders in a hot tub all together. That is fucking crazy talk. Gross, all the juice. Oh, no. Nope. No. So then after this, you know, at the point of this encounter, it was like, oh, Steve likes me. And it was like, do I like Steve? And as is a pattern for some of my relationships, it was like, I hadn't really thought about it because I just didn't really think about dating somebody. So sure. I mean, I like Steve enough that if she likes me enough to like say, let's date, I'm like, all right, let's date. Now, Steve was a fast tracker, which means that Steve seemed to have, as much as my parenting was horrible, Steve's parenting was abysmal, right? Basically, she was home alone all day, every day. And she would call and talk to me on the phone, but be like, you should come over. My parents aren't home. Over and over. Now, at this stage, and this is one of Poon Master Flex's favorite stories, because she was like, you should come over. And I was across town at my dad's house. And while I was on the phone with her, I was in my room, which was, the wall was completely covered with comic book posters. Because Wizard the Comics magazine had a poster issue every so often, and it had 100 posters, but really it was 50, because they were double-sided. And it was a pretty painstaking decision which sides to put up. You know, I still remember putting them up and being like, this poster of Onslaught is pretty fucking cool, and I don't really like the other side, even though I'm not an Onslaught, you know, whatever. I guess I'll put that up. But then there'd be like a great Wolverine on the side of one and a great Wolverine on the other side. And you're like, why wouldn't you put this on the other side? You know, there's one that was two-sided and it was both like Vampirella. And I was like, well, this is forcing me into a decision that I don't really like, but also do. Because then you have a Vampirella poster. So anyway, wall completely covered in comic book posters. I had bunk beds at the time, which I thought was great to myself. And I was on the phone with her building a tower out of popsicle sticks and hot glue, which was kind of a hobby of mine at that time, was to just build popsicle stick hot glue or, you know, aluminum can hot glue things, structures. And she's basically like, you should come over. And, you know, we should, like, get naked together.
And I was just like, nope, can't do that, you know? Because even at that tender age, I was like, I am not ready for that. Boy, am I not ready for that. I don't want to do that. I think this is probably the first person I like tongue kissed in that way where you do that, where you're just like, I guess you just kiss and then like your tongue kind of hangs out of your mouth too. It's horrible. God, is that horrible. So anyway, and that was pretty much the end of the relationship, because once she was like, okay, well, so do you not actually like me? You're not going to come over? And I was like, I like you, but I'm not coming over or anything. And that was the end. And we were star-crossed lovers because I was told, and I've never confirmed this fact, but I was told by a very reliable source who was close to Steve many, many years later, you know, 7, 8 years later, this source was like, you didn't hear what happened to Steve? And I was like, no. And she said, she took a bunch of drugs, she passed out next to a space heater, and she basically cooked her brain. And now she's in like a mental hospital, which is also where her mom is. And I was like, wow, that is way more fucked up than I even thought it was good. Like, I was pretty prepared for it to be fucked up. That was super fucked up. So there you go. That's star-crossed lovers. So here I am in school reading this story about these star-crossed lovers who have this fucking boring romance where basically their parents are like, I don't like them because their family sucks. And the other one's like, you know, it'd be like the modern day of if a family was like, well, my dad's an orthodontist and her dad's a chiropractor. And my dad doesn't respect him as a, you know, medical professional because he says that's hokum. But, you know, her dad is like, hey, at least I help people for not $1 million and whatever. And you're like, yeah, I mean, okay. As much as our dads don't like each other, I would like to see what you look like in a bra, let's say. So, you know, I guess that's what love conquers all means, is I'd like to see you in a bra. So anyway, I just found that to be, I think that that story is very underwhelming, even in eighth grade, but then probably to most people, because they're like, I think when you're that age, right, you're just kind of like, well, no, these guys don't understand. I get what they're doing is all fucked up, but my love is real and totally different from this. And totally different from any love that's ever existed. The fucked up part of Romeo and Juliet with this teacher, though, was that we watched the movie. And it was, I don't know when this movie was made, like the 70s. It was a pretty famous adaptation that this teacher insisted was like the good one. You know, it was like, well, there's a lot of versions, but this one's good and like accurate or something. And the one problem was there's definitely a topless scene where you see Juliet's boobs. Now, she had to like broach this subject with the class, which after talking about this rape scene, you'd think would be pretty easy. She'd be like, well, you see this woman topless, so I'm going to try and just fast forward through that. But, you know, it was a very awkward, stumbly, like, there is a scene of adult scenes and da-da-da-da. And basically, we all knew what it was. Because here's the other thing. Everyone knows what it was because, famously, the year before us, a class was watching this and just it went right through it, you know? They just didn't stop it or anything. And so I was like, are we going to see boobs in school? Now, I got to believe, getting back to that thing of like, you know, what a weird teacher telling eighth graders this story, I got to believe would be fucking fired in 2016, right? Of telling like, my boyfriend jacked off on my vagina. But I can't imagine in 2016 that you could show a Romeo and Juliet that you knew had topless boobs in it. And they would be like, that's fine. Whatever. So she was going to fast forward through them, you know, and she was like, I'm going to just fast forward through it. But here's the thing. If this was me, okay, if for some reason I was like, this is the only option, I would, well, first of all, I would just try and record over the tape because I'm not a fucking idiot. You put a piece of tape over that little square where there was a plastic tab, and then you just record over it, idiot.
But if I couldn't do that, I would be damn sure when it started, and then you watch the counter on the VCR and go until it's over. And if I was like, I don't know if this is going to work, I would be like, all right, I'm going to fast forward it for like a minute solid and then just be like, it has to be. You know, I'm going to fast forward it as long as it would be in real time and it would still be over by several minutes and then be like, okay, I'm good. Because who cares? We just read it. We know what happens. You don't have to show us every second. And she unpaused it just in time to catch just a little bit of the boobage. So that was perfect. That could not have worked out worse for her, really. It would have been better if she had just pretended she had no idea that this was a thing. She's like, well, I thought that, you know, this is an old-timey movie. Who would have thought there'd be, like, these jugs in the middle of a movie, right? So there you go. That's those stories. You know, I have more, but I think that this is actually the end of this show. I mean, that takes us pretty firmly out of eighth grade. We also read The Pearl by John Steinbeck, which was the first... I'll tell you what was horrible about that. We had this test, and it was like vocabulary, like reading criticism vocabulary, and one of the words was irony. Now, she was saying that it was ironic that... So there's a kid in the book named Coyotito, and at one point, the kid is hiding in a cave. It's a baby, right? And it starts crying. And some guy off in the distance who's looking for somebody with a gun hears this coyote cry. What he thinks is a coyote cry is this baby crying in a cave. So he fires his gun into the air to silence the coyote and scare it off. And just so happens to shoot and hit the baby. And this was the example that we were provided of irony. And it was like, to me, sounded like, well, that sounds like coincidence, right? That sounds like a real fucking coyote ex machina or some shit there. I mean, I don't know. You accidentally shot a fucking baby in a cave from a distance in the dark. That's an amazing... That guy should have a job at the fucking zoo. I'll tell you that right now. I'm sure there's more to say about that, but I mean, what am I going to say to come back from that, right? That's probably the best it could have gone, is to end on. And that guy should work at the zoo. This has been my sense of irony. Oh, you got that? This is my sense of irony. Pretty good. Pretty good. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We took a little break there, but we're back in action, baby. And we'll see you next week.
Well, it was Texas, it was Tennessee. And it was what I committed me. Well, you were unlike anything before. Like magic devil killer, I was yours. It was the early days of rock and roll. And it was Otis, it was Memphis song. It was a plane crash overnight. And it was burning fast and burning bright. Baby, don't you talk no more. That look is loud enough. You don't have to tell me how it feels not to be in love. You see, that was my oldest game. Darling, it was my claim to fame. And I knew it when I met you. All that you would need is more than what I got. Oh, so baby, please just stop. Well, it was Texas, it was Tennessee. And it was exes and some wannabes. It was reckless, it was understood. It didn't matter cause it felt so good.